You know, we live in a world just full of rules, regulations for, well, pretty much everything, right? Designed to keep us safe, ensure quality, food, homes, you name it.
Absolutely. Everything's regulated.
But have you ever stopped to think if maybe more rules always equals better results? Or if there's, I don't know, a smarter way, one that doesn't just bury everyone in paperwork?
That's the core question, isn't it?
Yeah.
For ages, the gut reaction was more rules, tougher enforcement. That's the way. Aim for 100% compliance, always.
Right, no questions asked.
But what if that's not the most effective path? What if it actually, drains resources we could use better somewhere else?
Okay, so here's where it gets really interesting for you listening. We're going deep today into a theory that kind of flips that old idea on its head. It's Richard Feynman's theory of regulatory compliance, TRC plus SIAM, and it suggests that chasing that perfect 100% might, well, it might make us miss the bigger picture, what really drives quality and safety.
Exactly. And to explore this, we're looking at some chapters from an ebook on regulatory science. And interestingly, the author himself found that some AI-generated insights from Gemini, actually, on his own theory were pretty thought-provoking, gave him some new angles.
Wow, okay. So fresh perspectives all around. Let's unpack this shift then. For a long time, regulation was pretty simple. More rules, stricter enforcement, better results. That was the assumption.
That was totally the assumption. Goal, 100% compliance, period.
Across the board.
Precisely. Historically, it was very much more is better, a linear idea, The more you regulate, the higher the compliance, the better the quality, the safer the public.
Simple.
But it didn't always work out that way.
Well, the systems often reflected that a one-size-fits-all monitoring approach. Didn't matter if a program had a great track record or was struggling. What forced a rethink was realizing, hey, this isn't always the most efficient or even the most effective way to get the outcomes we want.
Right, and that's where regulatory science steps in. It's not just about gut feelings anymore. Exactly. This field, it's multidisciplinary, said, hold on, let's use actual data. Let's use science to figure out what really works in regulation.
Moving beyond just like expert opinions or stories.
Moving from what felt right to actually studying it.
Yeah.
How effective are the rules? How do regulated entities behave? What's the real impact on quality and safety? Those limitations of the old more is better approach, they really showed we needed something more evidence-based, more strategic.
And that strategic thinking, that's really the core of Feynman's theory, the TRC plus order. The key idea, and this is crucial for you listening, is diminishing returns. It's not a straight line where, every extra bit of effort gives you the same improvement. It's curvy.
Yes, exactly. A curvilinear relationship. That's what TRC Plus proposes between compliance levels and, say, program quality or client outcomes. So your first efforts, big improvements, significant gains.
Makes sense.
But as you push higher and higher towards that 100%, the impact of each extra step gets smaller
Yeah.
and smaller.
Like studying for that test, the first few hours, huge difference. Those last frantic hours cramming, maybe not so much.
That's a great analogy. Or, squeezing the last bit of toothpaste, lots of effort, tiny reward.
Right. So Feynman suggests there's a sweet spot.
Yeah, a sweet spot. Maybe around 80-90% compliance. That's where you get the best bang for your regulatory buck, so to speak. The most gain in quality and safety for the resources you put in.
So chasing that absolute perfect 100% score could actually be a massive waste of time and money for very little real benefit.
That's the argument. The theory really challenges aiming for 100% across the board. It might not be the smartest use of limited resources. Instead, Feynman brings in this crucial idea, substantial compliance.
Substantial compliance. Okay, what does that mean exactly?
He defines it as a very high level of adherence. Think like 97% to 99% compliance with all the rules.
Okay, so almost perfect, but deliberately not going for that last little bit everywhere. Why? What's the thinking there for us?
The rationale is basically about resources. Getting from that really high level, 97, 99%, up to 100%, often takes a disproportionate amount of effort, time, money, people.
Right.
And the actual improvement in quality or safety from that last push, it might be tiny, maybe even negligible.
So the cost outweighs the benefit at that point.
Potentially, yes.
Yep.
And there's empirical evidence suggesting programs hitting that substantial compliance mark often achieve quality and safety levels pretty comparable to those at 100%, but they do it much more efficiently.
Okay.
Think about it like any complex system. getting 98% effectiveness in the critical areas is often way more practical, more impactful than driving yourself crazy trying to fix every single tiny flaw.
That idea that not all rules carry the same weight seems key here, which leads naturally to differential monitoring, doesn't it? Like, we shouldn't treat everyone the same.
Exactly. TRC Plus acknowledges, hey, not all rules impact outcomes equally. And just ticking compliance boxes doesn't always equal real quality. It's not that simple.
So that understanding supports differential monitoring, moving away from that one-size-fits-all oversight.
Precisely. It provides the theoretical backbone for it.
So if you've got programs that consistently show they're in that substantial compliance zone, you wouldn't need to watch them quite so closely.
Right. You wouldn't monitor them as intensely as, say, programs that are struggling or seem to pose a higher risk.
And that frees up those valuable regulatory resources. Time, people.
Exactly. By identifying those high performers, regulators can dial back the intensity a bit, and then they can redirect those resources, focus more support, more oversight on the programs having trouble, or where the potential for something bad happening is higher.
And this connects directly to that risk-based idea, right? Identifying the absolute must-haves, the do-no-harm rules.
Yes.
Those critical safety nets. For those, it feels like 100% compliance would still be the target, no question.
That's generally the idea. Fien emphasizes integrating a really thorough risk assessment process.
How does that work? How do you decide what's do no harm? Is it obvious?
Well, it involves carefully looking at the potential consequences if a rule isn't followed. What could happen?
Okay.
Those rules where noncompliance could lead to serious harm or really jeopardize basic safety, those get flagged as do no harm. And yes, for those high-risk rules, the goal is often still full 100% compliance.
So it requires careful thought, expert input, probably.
Definitely. It's not always black and white. It involves judgment and expertise to figure out which rules carry the biggest risks.
And the results of these risk assessments then feed back into how you do differential monitoring, like how often you inspect, how deep you go.
Exactly. The risk levels become a key driver, guiding decisions on frequency, intensity, the whole scope of inspections. It's about putting your energy where it matters most for preventing harm.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, how do you figure out which specific roles are the most telling, the most informative? That's the key indicator concept, right?
Right. Key indicators. And what's cool here for you is this. These are specific individual rules that historically data shows are strongly correlated with overall compliance.
So like a shortcut. If they follow this rule, they probably follow others too.
Sort of, yeah. The goal is to analyze past compliance data using STAPS to find these predictive rules. If a program nails these key indicators, it's a really good sign they're likely meeting lots of other requirements as well.
And there's a specific stat for this, the Fien coefficient, FC.
Yep, the Fien coefficient, FC, and a revised version, FC. They're used within something called the Regulatory Compliance Key Indicator Metric, or RC-KEM.
Okay, RC-KEM.
Think of the FC like a strong predictor. If a rule has a high positive FC, it means compliance with that rule strongly suggests compliance elsewhere.
So it's a good signal.
A very good signal. The revised version, FC, just tweaks the math a bit to work better when using substantial compliance as the benchmark in the analysis. It makes the identification even more reliable.
So a high FC is like an early warning sign or maybe a sign of good overall health for that entity.
Exactly. But, and this is important, these indicators aren't magic. They aren't set in stone. Their effectiveness depends on things staying relatively stable. If the rules change a lot or how programs comply changes, you need to go back to the data, reevaluate, see which indicators still work.
So it requires ongoing work, good data, statistical know-how.
Absolutely. You need robust data and the expertise to analyze it properly.
This all sounds way more sophisticated than just counting violations. Which brings us to the regulatory compliance scale, the RCS. It's not just pass-fail, right?
Correct. The RCS is more nuanced. Traditional monitoring is often binary. Compliant or non-compliant, yes or no.
Right.
The RCS offers a scale, an ordinal scale, technically. It reflects different degrees or levels of compliance.
So not just if they comply, but how well they comply.
Exactly. Gives you a much more granular picture. You can track changes over time more sensitively. You could distinguish better between programs, especially those hovering around that substantial compliance level we talked about.
Okay, I see.
And research suggests the RCS can actually be more informative than just looking at violation counts.
So it gives you a clearer view of that diminishing returns curve in action. You can see more distinctly how maybe those last few percentage points aren't adding much.
Precisely. A more detailed picture helps develop better monitoring, more targeted support for programs that need help.
Now, Fain didn't just stop at theory. He developed practical models like the Early Childhood Program Quality Improvement and Indicator Model, ECPQIM. Sounds comprehensive.
It really is. ECPQIM is a holistic framework specifically for early childhood education, integrating compliance with broader quality improvement efforts.
Okay.
It's considered a fourth-gen model, meaning it builds on lessons from earlier systems.
What are the main parts of it? What makes up ECPQIM?
It weaves together several things. Comprehensive inspections for a broad view, program quality standards, often called QRIS, quality rating and improvement systems.
Right, I've heard of those.
A systematic risk assessment process using those key indicators we discussed, implementing differential monitoring, providing professional development for staff, and ultimately focusing on child outcomes.
So it all connects.
Totally interconnected. The goal is to see how they all work together and validate the whole system statistically. And interestingly, research with this model suggests things like the Early Childhood Environment Rating Scale, ECQIS, actually correlate more strongly with compliance violations than some other quality measures.
Huh. And even though it's designed for early childhood, the basic ideas could apply elsewhere.
Absolutely. The core concepts, integrating compliance and quality, using risk assessment, key indicators, tailoring monitoring. You could adapt that for many regulated sectors where service or product quality is key.
Okay, another practical tool. The Differential Monitoring Logic Model and Algorithm, or DMLM. Sounds like the instruction manual for doing differential monitoring.
That's a good way to put it. The DMLM gives you a structured visual roadmap for implementing differential monitoring.
Okay.
It lays out the inputs like regulations, data, resources, then the processes, risk assessment, selecting indicators, and then the intended outputs and outcomes like better compliance, efficient resource use.
So it's like a blueprint. Shows you what you need, what to do, and what you're aiming for.
Exactly. For early childhood, inputs might be state rules, past inspection data, staff numbers, processes or doing the risk analysis, finding key indicators, setting monitoring schedules.
Right.
Outputs could be the risk scores for programs, the adjusted schedules, and the ultimate outcomes. Better overall compliance, better quality programs, hopefully better results for kids, and smarter use of the agency's time and money.
Makes sense. Then there's the UCM Uncertainty Certainty Matrix. Sounds like a way for regulators to check how sure they are about their own decisions.
Yeah, what's insightful about the UCM, it's adapted from the confusion matrix in stats, which some listeners might know. It helps gauge agreement and certainty in compliance decisions.
How?
Basically, it compares the regulator's assessment, what they think the compliance status is, with the actual true state of compliance.
Oh, okay. So it helps spot errors, like saying a non-compliant program is compliant or the other way around.
Exactly. It's a 2x2 grid looking at four possibilities. True positives, correctly spotting noncompliance. True negatives, correctly spotting compliance. False positives, thinking a compliant program is noncompliant. And the really crucial one, false negatives.
Which is?
Missing actual noncompliance.
Yeah.
Saying a program is okay when it's not.
Sounds like the riskiest one.
It usually is. The UCM coefficient gives you a number, a score for overall agreement. Closer to +1 is good agreement. Your zero is basically random chance. Closer to -1 means serious disagreement.
And this can help agencies find patterns, maybe inconsistencies between inspectors.
Yes. If you see lots of false positives, or especially false negatives, it might signal bias, or maybe the rules aren't clear enough. The UCM really highlights why minimizing those false negatives, missing real problems, is so critical.
Because that's where safety or quality could be compromised. And the UCM has guidelines for what to do based on the score.
Exactly. Different coefficient ranges suggest different actions, from no action needed all the way to maybe retraining staff or reviewing the regulations themselves. It's a tool for continuous improvement.
So putting it all together, Fain's ideas have really pushed regulatory science forward, haven't they? Away from that simple, more is always better view.
Absolutely. A profound impact. Challenging that 100% compliance dogma, highlighting diminishing returns, championing more nuanced measures like the RCS, providing data-driven tools like risk assessment and key indicators for smarter, targeted regulation.
It feels like a shift towards being more evidence-based, focusing on what actually improves safety and quality, but also being smart about resources.
That's the essence of it.
And you mentioned this isn't just theory. We're seeing differential monitoring, the idea of substantial compliance actually being used in licensing and oversight now.
Yes. The trend is definitely towards this evidence-based paradigm, prioritizing effectiveness and efficiency without compromising safety basics. The real-world adoption, especially in areas like human services, is a strong sign of the work's impact.
Now, like any big theory, I assume there have been criticisms or limitations pointed out.
Oh, sure. That's fair. Some worry that substantial compliance could be misinterpreted, right? Like it's an excuse for lower standards, which isn't the intent.
I could see that.
There are also ongoing debates about how hard it is to objectively measure quality beyond just rule compliance. And the classic concern about regulatory capture, where the industry being regulated gets too cozy with the regulators.
Okay. Standard challenges in the field, perhaps. But the field keeps evolving.
Definitely. Regulatory science is always moving, incorporating advances in data analytics, behavioral insights, adaptive strategies. Fiend's work is a really solid foundation for that evolution.
And what might be next? More AI?
Potentially. You could see AI and machine learning getting better at finding key indicators or predicting risks, maybe applying these diminishing returns principles even more explicitly when designing new regulations in the first place.
And it's really important for you, the listener, to grasp how these pieces fit together, right? TRC, differential monitoring, key indicators, risk assessment, RCS, they aren't separate things.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
It's a cohesive system. They build on each other. You can almost write it as an algorithm. TRC leads to differential monitoring, which uses key indicators plus risk assessment, and you measure it better with the RCS.
Okay.
And Fiend even outlined different ways agencies could implement this: sequential models, parallel models, practical pathways to put it into action.
So wrapping this up for everyone listening, Richard Fiend's theory of regulatory compliance, it really offers a different, maybe a smarter way to think about ensuring quality and safety in our complex world.
It really does. A major contribution.
Yeah.
Shifting the focus towards being more effective, more efficient, and much more data-informed.
And the key takeaways for you are that core idea of diminishing returns, focusing strategically on substantial compliance instead of just chasing 100% everywhere. And using those targeted, data-driven strategies.
Mm-hmm.
Differential monitoring, risk assessment, finding key indicators, using better measurement tools like the RCS, and things like ECPQIM and the UCM provide the practical how-to.
And crucially, this isn't just academic talk. These ideas are being used. They're influencing real-world regulation, especially in human services, mm-hmm. early childhood ed, leading to smarter oversight.
So maybe a final thought for you to chew on. Think about diminishing returns in other parts of your life. Where do you strive for perfection?
Ah, interesting twist.
Could focusing on substantial success in the most vital areas be, well, more effective, less draining than demanding absolute perfection on every little thing?
Yeah.
Maybe identifying your own key indicators of progress or assessing the risk of not hitting 100%. Could that lead to better outcomes overall, a more balanced approach?
Shifting from just absolute adherence to strategic focus. Thinking about what really delivers the best results for the effort. Something to consider.